chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. I'm excited to have Julie Erickson on the show today. Julie is the president and CEO at RX Outreach. Well, Julie, welcome to the Something Extra podcast, sister. I'm so happy to have you on the show today.
Lisa, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity. And I got to tell you, when you first asked me, I was like, you know, you interview such amazing people on this podcast. At first, I was so honored. And then I was like, oh gosh, she always talks about how, people are formed and how that creates them, or, you know, what their journey is to become a leader. And I really was very nervous about that. In fact, the first time I think Jenny called me to set up the time to do this airing or this recording, I was like, let's do it next month, you know, let's don't do this right away. But then I prayed on it. And I prayed on it and I thought about it. And so I decided that I wanted to share my story. And so this will be my first time.
I'm so honored, Julie. And I know your story. I know a little bit about your story. I'm sure there's a lot I don't know about your story. But as I told you, when you had told me your story, I have even more respect for you. And I look at you and I think, you know, you are a person of incredible grace that you extend to other people, you know, compassion, empathy. I've seen you in some hard situations, Julie. Even recently I've seen you in a hard situation, and just the way you dealt with that situation with a lot of grace. And now it makes me understand even more, because all of those things that you went through, I think, you know, God has used to form you into the leader that you are today. So I can't wait to dig into that. And I know your story is going to help our listeners, but I always start by kind of saying, how did we meet? And you know what? You and I initially met through the Women's Leadership Society.
Yes, we did. Yeah, at United Way. So, which was such a great opportunity to meet different women from all different backgrounds, but everyone had a heart for helping. So great place to meet wonderful women. And then unfortunately, the pandemic really kind of put a kibosh on a lot of that. So I think things are still just still trying to get momentum that they had before.
Right. Yeah. And so I don't know, you and I might have to jump in and see if we can help with the momentum, because I agree. I mean, at the time that you and I met, I think there were 3,500 women in that leadership society. And, but that's how you and I initially met. Now we're rooted sisters together. We've also been a client of your, partner of your organization. So we've touched each other in multiple ways. So I always love to just go back and tell our listeners, because sometimes they're like, well, how did these connections even meet? I just don't know that many people. Well, you know, I mean, you got to put yourself out there, right? I mean, Julie, absolutely. You and I did not get involved in the Women's Leadership Society, we may not have ever met.
That's it exactly. And you definitely have to put yourself out there. You never know who's going to cross your path and how they may play a role in the next chapter or a subsequent chapter of your life.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. So, you know, I do know a portion of your story, but I don't know everything. And so I would love to just dig in and you share as much as you feel comfortable with, just how you grew up. And then we got a lot of other things to talk about, because obviously I want to talk about the amazing work that you're doing today and some other things. But why don't you take me back?
Sure, absolutely. Well, really, my faith has shaped me all throughout my life. My path was very non-traditional, you know, or at least I thought my path was very non-traditional. But the more I get to meet people, the more I get to know people, I realize that everyone has a story. You know, mine's not all that different or terrible, or, you know, it's just my story. And everyone has a story. And Lisa, you always say a phrase that I like, which is iron sharpens iron.
Yes.
You know, and so the things that we go through can make us stronger. You know, so for me, I would say, you know, grit, perseverance, or, you know, really maybe just even plain hard-headed. But for me, my motto has always been, there was this cheesy old movie that kind of made fun of Star Trek, which I'm a big Trekkie, Galaxy Quest. And there in Tim Allen, his line is never give up, never surrender. And so that's kind of been my thing, never give up. But the only surrender I do is to the Lord, you know, because my faith has brought me through so many things and, you know, and has given me a life that is, I consider, just truly blessed. And so part of my journey was my parents were teenagers when they had me. And so they were married and divorced pretty quickly. I was passed around from family member to family member until the foster care system put me with my maternal grandparents at age 5. And that saved my life. So they had such a profound faith and I got to see it all the time. So prayer in the morning, praying at night when, you know, when they were going to bed, and just their dependence and reliance on the Lord. And I was there until about age 9. So my biological mother had mental health issues and substance abuse issues. And then at age 9, I was going back to her, was going to be reunited. You know, that's what they try and do in the system, is reunite families. And I remember my grandfather telling me, this is age 9, he was telling me that I'm the adult, that I needed to take care of my mother, you know, that she wasn't very responsible and that I needed to take care of her. And I took that very seriously. So I was always an old soul,
yes,
you know, but that's what I was supposed to do. So I was reunited, and there were still issues with mental health and substance abuse, and a lot of men in and out of the doors, violence, police would be called. I was molested at age 11. But when the men weren't there, then we wouldn't have resources. So like we would have to wash our laundry in the bathtub, because we didn't have enough money for the laundromat, or dinner would be a box of macaroni and cheese with just water and noodles. So, well, when I was 12, she had married and had my sister, which was a blessing, my half sister. But I moved out at age 16. So I just couldn't do it anymore. So I moved out at age 16. I got married at 18. And my husband, who saved me from that situation, was pretty abusive, emotionally, verbally. But it was better than what I had, you know, I had left. We bought our first house when I was 18. So always a hard worker, always working. I had kids my two kids at 20 and 22. And the funny thing is, at the time, I was so proud of myself for not being a teen parent, you know, and I thought that I hit 20.
Yeah, right, right.
Which is crazy now that I, you know, yeah, which is a little bit odd, but that was my trajectory, you know, that was the norm to me. So when I was 25, my sister came to live with me. She was 13 years old. And, you know, I had a friend tell me once that if we were, as a race, if we were all born as teenagers, the human race would have died out. Because teenagers can be just so challenging. That's why we're born as little cute little infants.
Right. That's a good point.
You want to have more and more. My sister was just a teenager. She was just a normal teenager, but with all of the mental health issues of our mother, it didn't work. So she came to live with me at age 13, and teenagers can, you know, be a little bit of a challenge, especially at age 25. I don't know what to do with that, but you know, we just kept moving forward, and I just, you know, faith, like I said, played a big part in God, where am I supposed to be? What am I supposed to be doing next? Our mother had tried to kill herself multiple times. And in the multiple suicide attempts, she would leave letters, leave her suicide notes, and she would blame me for the reason that she was killing herself. Or she would blame my sister, who was she was a kid, mm-hmm. you know, but it was part of her mental illness.
Yes. Yes.
You know, but still really, really hard to try and deal with. So I would take her to, you know, in the middle of the night, pick her up, take her to the hospital, fill out the affidavits for involuntary commitment. But she was attractive. She was intelligent, and she would talk her way out in a day or two, and the whole cycle would just start over again. Right. I would say, you know, one of the things that kind of helped quite a bit was when she moved away and I was no longer within that immediate reach. But all this time, you know, my life is going on. I'm raising my kids, pouring myself into my kids. I ended up getting a divorce after 17 years. And decided to continue my education, you know, that whole never give up thing, never surrender. So my focus for my kids, including my sister, who was like my kid, was that they were going to go to school, they were going to do well, they were going to college. It was not a if, it was where. And so my sister has a master's degree. She's an HR professional. My oldest daughter is an attorney. My son is a biologist that does cancer research, you know, and now I have two bonus girls, you know. So it's about, like, I just poured myself into them, and I'm like, you will succeed. You are going to change the cycle of our family, of our history. And mm-hmm. and part of that is, you know, we talked about my grandparents and the impact that they had on my faith. My grandmother always showed me this commitment and this belief that God was going to put her where she was supposed to be. And so when my kids were 2 and 3, I got my associate's degree. Well, my grandmother was working at County Hospital, and she had hit the glass ceiling, and she needed a degree. And so we actually got our associate's degrees together. And we got to, when we got our diplomas, they let us walk, you know, down the aisle together and get those together.
I had read that about your grandma, and I think your grandmother was 60 or something, right, Julie, at the time? Yes. You know, yes. I mean, what an awesome role model. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about your grandmother, because I know how you've described her, you know, I mean, yeah, what were those things about her? I mean, obviously she instilled her faith in you, and just this belief that you could be more and do more with God's help, right? But, you know, tactically, like those years that you lived with her, I mean, what do you remember the most? I mean, did she include you when she, I mean, she obviously made you first. She put you first, Julie, and then you turned around, because I've read that about your kids. Your kids absolutely adore you, and they attribute a lot of their success to you and how you raised them. And they said that you were holding a full-time job, you were going to school, but you always put them first. So I'd love for you, just like on a day in, day out basis, tell me about your grandma. I mean, what would she do, you know, that made her so special?
The things she would do when I was little, we would have meals, and, you know, I had a special cup that had a frog in it, you know, and you drink your milk, you see the frog. So she tried to make things fun. We always, my grandparents were always gone on the weekends. We went to KOA campgrounds all over the place. And the thing is, no matter where we were, I remember a time that we were going camping, and there was this couple that was having a really hard time, and they stopped and prayed with them. You know, they prayed with them. So it was always about, my grandmother's always been about how to give to others, how to take care of others and help others. And they didn't have a lot, you know. I remember all the special birthday cakes that she would make, and she made me so many. I had so many crocheted outfits, you know, even the little hats and the little Easter, you know, jackets and everything. She never wanted me to go without, just because, you know, times were tough. But she always believed in me and told me that I could do whatever I set my mind to, just had to work for it. So, And that set the tone and trajectory for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that is so beautiful. I love that. Well, you know, you kind of left off where you guys actually walked together and got your diploma together, which is awesome. But, you know, you didn't stop there, Julie. You know, you kept going and, you know, ended up, I guess, when you were a little bit older, you went and got your, I think you were the first in your family, right, with the bachelor's, and the first to get your master's, your MBA.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. From my mother, my grandmother. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so you went on to further your education, get an MBA from WashU. You know, I'm looking at our time here. Let's get into a little bit, you know, you've done a lot. You've done a lot. You worked at Epworth. I mean, you did a lot of things, but in, I guess it was 20, I want to say, you are currently the CEO of RX Outreach, and, you know, let's talk about that just a little bit, and then we'll take a quick break and we'll come right back and continue to talk about this. But RX Outreach branched off from Express Scripts in 2010, you know, and, you know, right now it's the country's largest nonprofit digital pharmacy. Julie, if you are in St. Louis, you know Express Scripts. It's a great success story, right? But we have listeners from all over the globe, and they may not know Express Scripts, RX Outreach. But can you like talk a little bit about just the history of ESI and then RX Outreach spinning off from there? Because it spun off in 2010, and then I think you were brought in, I want to say 2013, you know, as the first development director. And then, you know, we'll kind of get into your career a little bit. But tell a little bit about Express Scripts and RX Outreach and what you guys do, and then we'll take a quick break. I can come back and talk about some other things.
Absolutely. Yeah. Express Scripts is one of the nation's largest pharmacy benefits managers. So they manage OptumRx, and they were just purchased by Cigna recently. But, you know, huge organization serving the nation. And in 2010, one of the executive vice presidents was Michael Holmes, and a man of great faith. And he was praying one morning, and he said that he felt God put it on his heart to take RX Outreach and spin it off to help more people, to do more good. He wrote a white paper that morning, presented it to the board chair and CEO George Paz that afternoon, who said yes on the spot. And so Express Scripts donated over $7 million worth of automated filling equipment, drugs, desks, tables, chairs, computers, et cetera, all of it. And we are an actual pharmacy. So we are America's nonprofit pharmacy. So we actually fill the bottles. We have all this automated equipment. I have a friend who calls it Santa's workshop for medication. So getting people the medication that they need to live. And all of that automation was donated to us from Express Scripts just so we can help more people. And he did. So after we spun off, we doubled the number of people that we were helping.
That's incredible. There's a lot more I want to talk about there. I'll never forget, Julie, one time hearing Michael speak. And I think he had retired from Express Scripts and was kind of what, you know, Bob Buford would call your halftime. And like you said, was praying and really felt God nudging him, you need to do this, you know, so he came out of retirement and wrote that white paper. But it's just such a beautiful, beautiful story. And it's a faith-based organization. And we'll talk more about that. But we do need to take a quick break. And we'll be right back with Julie Erickson on the Something Extra podcast.
Hey there. In a challenging business climate like this, savvy leaders look to technology to find an edge. This can mean the difference between staying ahead of the curve or playing catch up. It's time to collaborate with the highly skilled experts at Technology Partners. Our team of technologists draws upon decades of experience for your project, with each bringing a passion for solving problems and a track record of success. How can we help you overcome your biggest technology challenges? Visit technologypartners.net to book a free consultation with one of our leaders.
So welcome back, everyone, to the Something Extra podcast with my friend and dear sister, Julie Erickson. And we've been talking all kinds of things here this morning, some of it very, very hard. But I know that her story is going to help listeners out there. I know that it's not unique. And there are going to be people that really relate. And so this woman is, I've seen her in action. She is filled with grace. Filled with grace for other people. The way that she handles situations is a very gracious. She has got a tremendous amount of empathy. She's got a lot of grit. She's got a lot of perseverance. But you know, what really drives Julie is her faith. And, you know, if you listen to the first half, that came from directly from her grandparents, and especially her grandmother had a huge, huge influence in her life. But Julie, we're talking about ARCS Outreach. I love this story. I love this story of Michael Holmes having failed from retirement. And him coming out of retirement, ARCS Outreach, that's how it was born. But tell me a little bit about the vision of ARCS Outreach, if you would.
Absolutely. So we don't feel like anyone should ever have to do without their medication. You know, we would like to create a nation with equitable health outcomes for every person. And what does that mean? That means no matter where you are, if you're rural, if you're in inner city, you know, no matter what the barriers are, our goal is to overcome those barriers to access. And we found we've evolved over the years since we spun off in 2010, because at first we really just focused on affordability, right? So that was really the biggest barrier. Well, now we've found that there are a lot of other barriers to access. So you may be an alderman in your small town with an opioid use disorder. You know, you may be addicted to opioids. You may not want to go stand at your neighborhood pharmacy and stand in line and get your treatment for your medication assisted treatment for your opioid use disorder. That is a barrier to having that person reclaim their lives from that addiction. And so we offer, we are a closed door pharmacy, which means people don't come in and out. We offer home delivery. So all the medications, over 200,000 prescriptions each year, ship out directly to their door in all 50 states, U.S. Virgin Islands and Puerto Rico. And we help overcome some of those barriers, not only the affordability by offering some free medications as well as very low price medications, but also that stigma. You know, so if there are mental health medications, you may not want to discuss those. Once again, standing in your neighborhood pharmacy, you know, so HIV medications, men's health medications, addiction treatment medications. And so our goal is to make sure that everybody has access to the medications that they need, regardless of whatever those barriers are. Mm-hmm. And Lisa, I got to tell you, so this is one of my, and this is part of the leader piece as well. One of the things I'm most excited about is our blessings program. And so every person that works in this organization who answers the phone, answers texts, answers emails, they have the authority to grant one blessing per week. They don't have to ask for their permission or for their supervisor's permission. They don't have to make the person fill out an application. They make that decision. They are empowered to make that decision. And so if they're speaking with a patient and, you know, sometimes our patients will say, you know what, can you wait till next week because I don't have $20? We'll say, you know what, don't worry about it, Ms. Erickson. We're going to go ahead and bless you today, and that's going out to you free of charge. Mm-hmm. So they can give away medications free of charge, and it doesn't matter the amount. They make that decision. And so essentially what that does is every person in this building, every staff member, every team member owns the mission. They own it. And mm-hmm. so, and feel such a great part of what it is that we're doing. And it makes a huge difference, not only for them, but for our patients as well.
Oh, I love it. It's love in action, Julie. It's love in action. I love that. Yes. You know, I was just thinking, because I know that, you know, I mean, here's the thing, you know, in some cases, these medications are really expensive. And I don't understand. I know you understand a lot more about that, but some of these medications are just ridiculously priced, you know? And, you know, you've said you don't want a mom having to choose between food for her child or possibly cholesterol medicine for herself, you know? But that's the reality. That's really the reality when these medications are so expensive. Can you talk about that, this rising cost of prescription drugs? I mean, what is it, Julie? I mean, I'm sure you've studied, I know you have studied this whole, you know, concept.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, the thing is, the U.S. pays for a lot of the research and development for medications for the world. We pay more for medications than any other country in the world. And it's the same medications, you know. And what happens sometimes when a product goes generic, you know, so there is a period of exclusivity where they are under patent. And when they're getting ready to lose that exclusivity and generic manufacturers can start making the equivalent, sometimes even those generics are still not affordable. So you might have gone from a, you know, $1,000 medication per month to now it's only $300. Okay, but you still don't have $300. 85% of our patients make less than $40,000 a year. So, mm-hmm. you know, that is just, it is just too big a burden, too big a barrier, you know, and there are some medications. We have a cancer drug that is $5,000 a month. If you get a good Rx coupon and go and get it with a coupon, and we have it for $60. So there are just so many barriers, and some of them are huge differences like that one, but others it's $50 less, it's $75 less, it's $20 less. And what that does is that adds up because mm-hmm. you're right, especially these days with inflation the way it is, you know, every bit counts for people as they're trying to feed their families. You know, so it's really mm-hmm. important for us that we are able to provide access to those medications.
Yeah. We'll talk about this a little bit because I know that you guys are advanced technology wise and you have used technology in your Santa's workshop as you described it, or your, what does your friend say? It's Santa's work job for
medicine.
For medicine. Right. Yeah. But, you know, robotic arms and that sort of thing. So how's technology helped with the cost of goods? if you would, you know, talk about that a little bit.
Well, there are three different ways that we're able to, that our business model works. One is that we have relationships directly with the manufacturers. So remember where we came from. Mm-hmm. Most manufacturers don't want to ship directly to independent retail pharmacies. That's just too much paperwork. That's too much going on. So they, manufacturers, send their product to wholesalers. Then the small independent pharmacies get their products from the wholesalers. Well, because of who we are and our mission, the manufacturers actually contract directly with us. So we skip that whole layer of cost. Then mm-hmm. we also, as a nonprofit, we raise about $500,000, about $500,000 every year to help offset some of the costs. We also get about 15% of our drugs actually donated directly from the manufacturers. And these are same manufacturers that you're going to get when you go to Walgreens or CVS or Walmart or any of the other ones. And so that really helps us kind of offset prices across the board. But one of the biggest ways that we help save is through our automation. So, you know, you get the little bottles in the racetracks and automated filling. What that means is that we can have more people on the front ends talking and interfacing with our patients versus working in the back and just putting pills into bottles, mm-hmm. you know, and it is pretty amazing. You see the robot arm scanning, you know, to say, okay, wait, there are three bottles that are in this order. And instead of us shipping out three separate orders, you know, three separate bottles, it'll actually gather them and it'll put them all together. And then when the order is complete, then it'll send it out to ship. And then once it's ready to package, our equipment will actually scan it and say, okay, it is, 18 ounces and it's going to Des Moines, Iowa. And so what's the cheapest way that we can get there, within 2 to 5 days? And so it will actually rate shop and then select that option as well. So it was just such an amazing blessing that ESI gave to us, all this equipment that is so sophisticated and able to do those things. And once again, for the benefit of nonprofit.
Absolutely. Well, I love it. I love it. And, it's just amazing. Technology really can improve the world. It really can. So, and I love the fact that you said, you know, instead of having people putting pills in pill bottles, they're interfacing with the client, with the customer, which is wonderful because that's such a service. But, you know, how many people right now are you serving and how much would you say that you've saved?
So we serve about 30,000 each year. But to date, we've served over 500,000 people and saved them over $1 billion. And it's not just about the savings, because these aren't people that they're saying, oh, great, I have more money in my pocket. No, these are people who are saying, oh, great, I have more money so I can buy food. Mm-hmm. I have more money so I can pay my utility bill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because again, like you said, these people, you know, on average are making under $40,000 a year. I mean, that's, you know, they're having to make choices. They're having to prioritize. So you guys, I'm just going to say a couple things and then I want to ask you something about this, but you were voted the best online pharmacy by Forbes Health in 2022. That is awesome. Congratulations. And the best online pharmacy by Money Magazine for both 2020 and 2021. What do you think, Julie, were some of the determining factors to have you guys get that accolade? What were some of those factors?
I think it really is just the commitment to the service, serving our patients, you know, every bottle cap that comes out of here has on the cap, it says, honoring God by serving others. And that really is the heartbeat of what we do. And so I think that you just get a different, and I'm not trying to disparage any retail pharmacies or anything like that. They provide a tremendous service, but ours is a nonprofit. So it's a little bit more than just, you know, great customer service with giving your medication. Actually, all of our people who answer the phones are health coaches, and they'll ask people, Is there anything else, you know, Ms. Erickson, now that I have your medications all taken care of, is there anything else that's limiting you from living your healthiest life? Anything I can help with? We've given referrals to the National United Way for food, for housing, for utilities. So it's about taking it that extra mile. And I think that that really resonates for people. And that's what helps make us a great online pharmacy.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you that because I've told you that before. I love what's on your bottle caps. Yes, I love every bottle cap has that on there, honoring God by serving others. And I love that. Well, gosh, Julie, there's so much more here that I can talk to you about, but I'm just going to rattle off a few of these things. I just read when you first came on as the CEO, some people were introducing you. And here's just some of Julie Erickson-isms, I guess, if you would. Optimism is timeless. No margin, no mission. All hands on deck. And then you've got here the mission with a meaning. And, you know, you're such a strong believer in the mission. And, you know, you said you feel like what we all hold to create a world where every person can have access to the medication that they need, you know, truly has been your why, you know, for working at RX Outreach. But you've done so many other things, Julie, and this is something we did not talk about, but I know you did a mission volunteer to El Salvador with Compassion in 2016. And our family took a trip to El Salvador and worked in orphanages. So that's something you and I had not talked about. I also know that you were an examiner for the Malcolm Baldrige Award. And of course, you know, I mean, I started my career at McDonnell Douglas, and I remember what an, you know, incredible award that was. You know, I mean, really kind of the gold standard, really, in terms of quality. But you did that. And I know that you would not say this, but I'm so proud of you because you're just recently recognized by the Urban League of St. Louis as a 2023 Salute to Women in Leadership honoree. So
thank you
for all you're doing, really, to just improve not only our region, but the world with what you're doing, Julie. But I have to ask you, this is called Something Extra. What would you say, Julie, is the something extra that every leader needs?
I think for me, the something extra is you have to invest in your team's success, not your own. By investing in your team and their success, when they win, you win. So pour yourself into your people.
Yeah, that's good. That is really good. And I'm thinking it ties right back to that bottle cap.
Yes.
Honoring God by serving others, right? And as a leader, that is what we're called to do, is to be servant leaders and serve our team to help our team be the best that they can be, right? So we all win when that happens. Well, absolutely. I would love to be able to talk to you for 10 hours, but I don't know that anybody would listen to our episode for 10 hours. So I just so appreciate you making the time to be on the show today. I think so much of you.
Lisa, thank you so much. I just appreciate you so much, sister. And I appreciate this opportunity. It was hard, but I just love you for putting me in this seat.
Yeah. Thanks so much.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc. 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.